We're holding on Tzadik Chesed and Beis, three lines from the bottom. We started learning yesterday, the Gemara had been discussing the question, the Mishnah had said that if you have brother, that brothers who are Tzadik Chesed and Aleph, towards the bottom. The Mishnah had talked about the idea that Giyot's children are Lo Chelts and Lo Miyavmin, they don't do Chalitza and Yibum to each other's wives. And we discussed in the Gemara, does that mean they're also two? Which was Rav Sheshes' position, or does it mean there's no need to because they're not considered related at all, which was Rav Acha bar Yaakov's position, which therefore he also says they're allowed to marry each other's wives if they want to. And we discussed the pros and cons, whether we're talking about they have the same mother or the same father or both. And we went through our Mishnah and a number of Braises to try and prove one way or the other whether we can prove like Rav Sheshes or like Rav Acha bar Yaakov. And we still haven't finished it yet. Tashma. Ger shahaya leidasa v'kdusha v'hayrasa shalai v'kdusha. A ger who was born v'kdusha, so his mother was born, when his mother gave birth to him, she was already a geirus, but he was conceived previously shalai v'kdusha while his mother was still a geita. Yesh lo she'er ha'im, the Braisa says, it's considered that he has mother's side relations, v'ein lo she'er ha'im, but he does not have father's side relations. Because like we said yesterday, either we say that when it comes to goyim, they're promiscuous, so we can never be sure who the father was, or even when we don't say that, like in the case of twins, where necessarily whoever's the father of one is necessarily the father of the other, there's still the idea that Rahman afkure after lazari, that there's a kasuv that a goy's children are not considered his children. For many purposes in halacha. Ketzad, so what does this mean? He has she'erim, he has mother's relationships, but not father's. Nasa achosim in ha'em yotzi, if he married his sister from his mother's side, so meaning he has an older sister who was born when his mother was still a goita, she converted also. So even though you could argue gershin is gai kukat n'shanay l'dami, so there should be nothing wrong with him marrying her because they're considered like newborns, nevertheless, we don't allow it. Rashi says the reason is because what would happen if it was the other way around? What if instead of his older sister, who was born when their mother was a goita, what if instead he married his younger sister, who was born after their mother converted? That would be an issur daraisa because then they both have the same mother. If he married his older sister, technically there should be no issur in it because she was born. She was nisgaya afterwards. She was born a goita and then converted. So gerish and nisgaya are kachin shenayel dami. She's not really considered a sister la halacha. But if we allow him to marry her, then he might mistakenly but do the same thing and marry his younger sister, who was born after their mother converted already. She was born fully Jewish, and he was born a Jew already also, because by the time he was born, remember, he was in between. He's the in-between one. He was conceived when the mother was a goita and born when she was already converted. So he'd be considered his younger sister's brother, la halacha, and that would be also. So therefore, yotzi, therefore he has to divorce her. Mina'av yakayim, but if they only have the same father, then he's allowed to stay married to her. Tosfos has a bit of a discussion about this, that not necessarily is that the reason, because of older versus younger sisters. Tosfos argues the reason is because you have to make a gzera because the reason why he makes a gzera about his sister from his mother's side is because people may confuse them with born Jews. If you're going to allow him to marry his sister from his mother's side, even if it's his older sister who was born as a goita and afterwards converted, nevertheless, people may confuse them. People may think that they're born Jews, and that you're allowed to do that. I mean, then Tosfos points out a couple of other possibilities. One is that there's the concept you don't want them to say boner mikdusha chamurah with dusha kala. We learned before in the survey about Gerus and the Mem that you don't want a goy to say before we had an isser on this, and now as Jews we're allowed to do something that we were also to as goyim. So the standards for Jews are more lax than for goyim. We don't want that. So since a goy is not allowed to marry his sister from his mother's side, as we learned from Avraham and Sarah, where he says, "Davi Melech, Achoyti Bas Obihi, Achloi Bas Imi," that Sarah is my sister from my father's side, but not from my mother. So a goy, we learn, is not allowed to marry his sister from his mother's side. Therefore, we make the same. Therefore, Tosfos argues one explanation of Tosfos. It argues that we make the same zera on him even after they converted.
What was the case with Davi Melech?
Avraham telling Avimelech, you know why I presented Sarah as my sister? Because in a way, she really is my sister. She's my sister from my father's side. Now, really, she wasn't a sister, she was a niece. But okay, B'nei Bonim Harem Kibonim, we learned. So whatever, anyway, the point is, we learned from that passage from Sanhedrin, when the Gemara has the whole, the Gemara has a survey in Sanhedrin about Sheva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, and the details of them, what Arayas are and aren't Mitzvot to Goyim. The Gemara points out that from that, he's from that pasuk, from the way Avraham phrases it, we see that a goy is allowed to marry his sister from his father's side, but not a sister from his mother's side. Anyway, it continues the Braita. Achoisa av min ha'em yotzi. Also, if this ger married his father's sister, where it's his sister on his mother's side, so it's his father's sister, it's his father's maternal sister. Also, Yaitzi, also we force him to divorce her. Same idea, because we might confuse it with his own sister from his mother. I mean, Av Yekayim, but if it's his father's sister only on the father's side, then he's allowed to stay married to her. Achoisa Em Mina Em Yaitzi. Similarly, if he marries his mother's sister, where his mother and his sister are only half sisters, they have the same mother, Yaitzi, then he has to divorce her. Same idea, we always consider Sadeim. Mina'av, what if it's his mother's sister where they share the same father? So his grandfather on his mother's side had two daughters. One is his mother, one is this aunt of his. Or he had two daughters from two different marriages. One is his mother, one is his aunt. So they have the same father, but they have different mothers. Rav Meir says they still have to divorce. Because after all, you do have Tzad'im, you do have a mother involved over here. Yes, these two women share the same father only, but how is she related to you? Through your mother. She's your mother's sister. And Rav Meir holds, that's enough to make her also to you. But Chum Mam Yekayim, the Chum say you're allowed to stay married to her, because it's too different from your own sister, from your mother's side, for us to make that zayin. Shahayir Rav Meir, I mean, Rav Meir used to say a general rule, called Erva Shum Mishum Shera Em Yaitzi, any Erva that is also because she's a relative of your mother, then you have to divorce. Meaning, in other words, again, we're talking about over here, a ger married this woman who also is a geirus, on the face of it, but she's related to him from his mother's side. Nevertheless, you have to divorce her for whatever reasons that we mentioned before, either because you might confuse it with the case of a younger sister, or because the kedusha chamor or kedusha kala business, or because you don't want them to be confused with Jews. But if they're only related on the father's side, then you're allowed to. Because we said before, a goy is not considered related. Even when he was a goy, he wasn't considered to be related to any of his relatives on his father's side. Rameh said, Yotzi, because Rameh had said that any case where there's a mother, where it's a relative of the mother, even in a case like this, we're talking about again, that your mother's father was married to two different women. He had two different daughters, so they have the same father, different mothers. But so this woman, your aunt, is your mother's sister only through her father. You would think maybe that should be mutter, because we said before, father's relations are mutter. But because she's related to you through your mother, then the mayor says no good. However, continues the Braisa, a ger is allowed to marry the wife of his brother from his mother's side, which Rashi explains. The reason is because there the Isser does not come about by birth, there the Isser only comes about by marriage. And the Rabban won't go around that. Similarly, he's allowed to... according to the various reasons that we said before, either that it's less likely to be confused if it's a matter of Kedushin versus younger and older sisters, or because people are less likely to confuse it with the case of a Yisrael, or because there's no Kedusha Chamura, Kedusha Kala business, because you were mutter in her as a goyel. No, we're talking about his brother divorced or his brother died or whatever. We're saying because we're talking about it here. They have the same mother. If they were born Jews, there wouldn't be any Yibum anyway. You don't do Yibum with your brother on your mother's side. Your brother on your mother's side, his wife is an heir to you permanently. But because we're talking about over here about Gerim, because we're talking about over here about Goyim who converted, then we're allowing it. So you're allowed Eishes Achim, this Ger is allowed to marry the wife of his father's brother. and other all other arayas are also mutter to him, all the other ones that would be arayas for Jews. What does that mean? That comes to include also his father's wife. So if his father was married to a woman, and then later on his father divorced her or died or whatever, this woman was nisgayer, this ger is allowed to marry her. Continues the braisa. Nasa ishovita, if this ger married, if this ger, while he was a goy, married a woman and her daughter, which as a yid he would be awesome to do that, but as a goy he did that. So we don't know what. As a goy, he's able to do that. There's, yeah, I mean, there's no issue on. I mean, the goyim themselves weren't always careful about these things anyway. But even under Shavu Mitzvah Nenayach, that's not an issue. Under Shavu Mitzvah Nenayach,
they're not allowed to marry their own.
No. When we say Isha Ovita, we don't mean her, his own daughter. We mean this woman had a daughter from a previous marriage, from a previous relationship, or whatever. So he marries the two of them. So now, when they're all nisgayer, we don't allow him to stay married to all of them. Koinus achas and moitzi achas. The daughter of that woman, right? It's not his own daughter. It's not his own daughter. It's his stepdaughter. Yeah. What?
Converted.
So after they convert, koinus achas and moitzi achas, he's allowed to stay married to one, but he has to divorce the other one. We do not allow him to stay married to both of them. Why? Same reason. Now she says because if it were Yisrael, it would be Aser. We don't want people to be confused. Yeah. Lachatchila lo yichnais. And continues the Braisa. Lachatchila, he's not allowed to marry them. Now, what does that mean? Obviously, if he has to divorce one of them, of course, Lachatchila, he can't marry both of them. We'll get to that later on, and we'll get to that in a few lines as well, what that means. And the Braisa finishes off. Meisa ishtei mutu b'chamoisei. This guy who became a ger, if his wife dies, then he's allowed to marry his mother-in-law. We're talking about after the Nisgaya.
Right.
We're talking about after the Nisgaya. He, his wife, and his mother-in-law were all Nisgaya.
Right.
They all converted. His wife died.
Right.
If it was Yisrael, we learned the Machlokas or Bishmar or Bakiva, whether he's still Osir, whether it's still an Isser Mrs. based in to marry his mother-in-law, according to Rabbi Shmuel, or Rabbi Akiva, we had two different ways of explaining whether he holds that it's still a Mrs. based in, or it's only an Isser Karas, or maybe only an Aura or whatever. But here, by a Ger, we're not going there on that.
That's what I mean.
Yeah. So, now that was the whole Braita. So what's the point? Katoni Mias Mutabesh Azachim. So one of the things the Braita had mentioned is that a Ger is allowed to marry his brother's wife. My love, the Nasva Achiv Shu Ger. And again, wouldn't we assume that it means that it's talking about his brother married her after he became a Ger, which was the case that we've been talking about all this time, that Rav Sheshes and Rav Achav Yaakov have been arguing about, where according to Rav Sheshes, he would be also to marry her, and according to Rav Achav Yaakov, he's Mutter. If the Braita is saying he's Mutter, that contradicts Rav Sheshes. And again, the answer is, no, the case is that he married her when he was a goy, and as we learned yesterday, as Rashi said, after he and his wife, after this brother and his wife were nisgayer, they had not yet had relations before the brother died, because if they did, then that would have been the equivalent of kedushin, and now she's his complete wife. So therefore, there was never a kedushin, there was never a marriage that was chal, according to Torah, after they became gayrim. So therefore, of course, the surviving brother is allowed to marry her, they're not considered related at all. And again, the question is, Maila Memra? Well, in that case, what's the Chiddush? And again, the answer is, like with the previous ones, you might have thought you should make a Gzeira that don't allow the surviving brother to marry her, even though the original brother married her when he was a goy, because it might too easily be confused with the case where he married her or remarried her or whatever after they became Gerim. Kamash Malan, the Chiddush is that we do not make such a Gzeira, even according to the Pshesh, he's allowed to marry her.
Why would I make
because we're not so worried about that yet. Okay, so we still don't have a proof one way or the other. Omamar, the Braisa said, Nosa Ishu Vita Koinis Achas and Moitzi Achas. We said that if this guy had married, and who later on became a ger, had married a woman and her daughter, again, not his own daughter, but her daughter from a different relationship. Koinus achas and moitzi achas. We said he can stay married to one. He has to divorce the other one. And the braisa said lachatchila lo yichnos. Lachatchila, he's not allowed to marry them. So the question is, what does that mean? Hashtag pokibach mapik lachatchila mebaya. If we're forcing him to divorce one, of course he can't lachatchila marry both of them. What are we talking about? The answer is Hossam Koi. The phrase Lachatchila Lo Yichnos is not referring back to this specific case about the issue of Rita. It's referring back to all the previous cases. The Braisa has mentioned half a dozen cases of when we allow a goy to remain married to his wife who he married when he was a goy who's a close relation of his, when we say if it was a relation on his mother's side where we say that they have to divorce anyway, versus if it was a relation on his father's side where we say that we'll allow them to remain married. The point is, even all these ones, such as the relations on the father's side, where the Rabbanan say he's allowed to remain married to them, as a ger, he should not marry them. If he married them as a goy, and now is still married to them as a Jew, we won't force them to divorce. But the evidence is fine, basically, but he's not allowed to.
Do we inform him not to...
When he's a goy, you can't really inform him.
No, but I mean, if, when he's about to convert, they ask him...
Maybe, I don't know. Then the bride said, continued, Mesa Ishtim Mutter B'chamoy, so that if we said that if this ger's wife died, then he's allowed to marry his mother-in-law. The Ikka Tani, but there's a different version of the bride that goes also B'chamoy, so that no, he's not allowed to marry his mother-in-law. So what's the point of the machlokes? One version of the bride, so the one that says that he's also, goes according to Rabbi Shmuel, the other according to Rabbi Akiva. Again, we learned the other day, Rabbi Shmuel had understood the pasuk the Eish Yisrufu Oseh Es Hen that we said that a man who marries, the Torah says that a man who marries a woman and her mother, we say you burn him and them in fire, you give them a sefa. And the question is, what do you mean all of them? The first one he married, he legitimately married. Why should she be punished? And we said Rabbi Shmuel had held that, right, the word Es Hen means one of them, the one that he married second, the one that he's also. But we said there, therefore, that means Rabbi Shmuel holds even after the first one he married died, you're still not allowed to marry the other one from the pair. And you do, according to Rabbi Shmuel. According to Rabbi Shmuel, the Issur of Srefa applies even in that case. But the Es Hen, even if there's only one of them still alive, then she's the one who gets Srefa, as long as she's the second one, obviously. But the first one, then yeah. Whereas Rabbi Akiva had learned differently. We said there was an argument between Abaye and Rava what Rabbi Akiva holds. Is it that Rabbi Akiva just learned the pasuk differently, that he learned Eshen really does mean both of them, but he understands that both of them were married Ba'avera? So you're talking about, for example, you were married to a woman who you married the Heter, and then you went and married her mother and her grandmother, which both of them are Be'isra, and therefore Eshen refers to both of them. In which case, then, there's no difference. It also doesn't matter whether you, the original wife is alive or dead when you marry the other two. Versus, according to Rava, we said that according to Rabbi Akiva, if the original wife is dead and then you marry the mother-in-law, then we said there's no issur sreifa. And we talked about Rashi and Tosfos discussed the question, is there still an issur karis involved, or is it only alive, an oru?
It still depends whether she's alive or not.
According to Rava's understanding of Rabbi Akiva. So when we say over here that the guy, what? Aru means cursed.
Because the pasuk. It doesn't mean a lav.
No, it is a lav. It's a strong lav, but not strong enough to be chiyuv misa or karis.
Is that either aru or lav?
Or either aru or karis.
Or karis.
Rashi holds it's only a lav, and Tosfos holds it's still an issur karis. Whatever it is. So here, if we have one braisa, if we have one version of the braisa that says that a ger is not allowed to marry his mother-in-law, then that would be like Rabbi Shmuel. Manda also could Rabbi Shmuel. The one who says is also holds like Rabbi Shmuel. The Amar Chamoisel Achamisa beIsura Kaima. He holds that a mother-in-law, after the original wife died, the Isur is just as strong. The same Isur and the same chiyuv of Sreifa of Misas Beis Din applies even after the wife is dead. Therefore, Gabi Ger goes to Berabanan. Therefore, logically, we can say that even by a Ger, even though technically it's not also, obviously there's no Chayiv Nisa, nevertheless, because it's such a strong Isser by Yisrael, so the Rabbanan are going to make such a Zera by a Ger as well. And after.
It's really
yeah. According to Rabbi Shmuel. Mandashori could have a kiva, whereas the version of the Braisa that says that the ger is allowed to marry his mother-in-law is like Rabbi Akiva, specifically according to Rava's understanding of Rabbi Akiva. He says that after the wife has died, the Isser on the Chamois, on the mother-in-law, is Kolashlei, is weaker. Either, like we said, according to Rashi, it's only a lav at that point. It's only a lav that has an oror attached to it, a curse. Or according to Tosfos, it's an issur karis. But either way, there's no mitzvah based in. Therefore, v'gabe ger l'gazer be rabbanon. So therefore, by a ger, according to that way of looking at it, the rabbanon would not have made the gzera to begin with, since anyway it's not an iser d'oraisa. So that would be according to Rava's understanding of Rabbi Akiva. So the two versions of the b'raisa reflect the two different opinions. Mishnah says, Mishnah says, Chomish nashim shnis aru val b'sehen. If you have five women whose children got mixed up, now how would they have gotten mixed up? So the classic case in the Gemara, is, let's say you have a whole bunch of people hiding out in a cave or something, hiding out from the Greeks or the Romans or the Muslim terrorists or what have you. And you have five pregnant women over there, and all of them give birth. And then, in the confusion, in the darkness, or whatever, nobody knows whose baby is who. Now, let's also say, in this scenario, that each one of these women also has one son born previously, who we know for sure is her son. So basically, each of these, say you have five women over there, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, Leah, and Dina, let's say. Each one of them has one child who she knows is her own. Sarah has a son, Reuben. Rivka has a son, Levi, etc. And each one also has one son out of this group of five who we don't know which one is her son. Shimon, Yehuda, Yisroelon, etc. Now, Higdilu Atarovis, so these mixed up children grow up, Venosu Nashim, and they marry. Umesu, and then they die. Now, the problem is like this. On the one hand, their wives need Yibum, or Chalitza, but we don't know for each one of the five of them which one of them is their brother. So we can't just say their wives should be able to go and marry one of the remaining brothers. What if they're marrying the wrong one? And then it turns out it's a Yavama Lashoka, Yavama marrying outside the family, which she can't. So what do you do? Well, there is a Zika. There is definitely one of these five surviving boys is the brother of each one of these five surviving boys is the brother of one of these unknown children. We just don't know which one is which. What we do is like this: our Bachotin Lachas of the five surviving brothers, the ones who we know are the sons of the respective mothers. Four of them do chalitza to one of the women, Ve'echad miyabemaisa, and then one can do yibum with her. Why? Because no matter how you look at it, either one of the four who did chalitza is indeed her brother-in-law, and then good, she's allowed to marry whoever she wants. She's potter; she can go marry anybody in the world. Or none of the four of them was her brother-in-law. In that case, the chalitza didn't really accomplish anything anyway, and then she's doing yibum with her proper brother-in-law. So that takes care of one widow. Next, who ushloisha choltin la'achas? Next, the one who did yibum with the first woman, as well as three of the other brothers, do chalitza with the next one. Ve'echad miyabim, and another one does yibum with her. Same idea. Nimtzu aba chalitzas v'yibum l'chalachas v'achas. So it comes out that each one of these wives has to undergo four chalitzas, and then she can do one yibum. Now, obviously, I mean, you don't have to do yibum really anyway. I mean, you could just have all five of them do chalitza, and she goes and marries somebody outside the family. The Mishnah would rather talk about how we can accomplish yibum, because as we learned earlier in the Masechta, according to the Chachamim, anyway, yibum is preferable to chalitza. So when we have a choice, when we have an ability to do yibum, we should make that possible to do. We don't know if it's yibum or not, right? But yeah, but at least there's the possibility. Yeah,
there is a zika.
Right. We don't know whether No, it's true. None of the women may have ended up marrying her brother-in-law. Right, but at least there's a chance that Yibum has been accomplished. Yeah.
There is a Zika, but we don't know who is
the Zika. Right, so that's why we have to do the four chalitzas and the Yibum. So Gemara points out, V'davka michlat v'hadr Yibum, it has to be done in that order. First that the four potential brothers do chalitza, and only then the fifth potential brother does Yibum. Avo Yibum v'reishal, but it can't be the other way around, that first he does Yibum, and then the other four do chalitza. D'kapaga v'yivam l'shuk, because it might turn out he's not her brother-in-law, the one who's doing Yibum, and then he's marrying her when he's outside the family. Yibum is where the brother-in-law marries the widow of the dead brother. Now, the Gemara asks, "My who shloisha choltin la'achas?" Now, why did the Mishnah have to say that the one who did yibum and the other four and the other and another three all do chalitza for one? On the face of it, what we could have just said, we could have just said like this. We could have said, let's say, for example, that with the first, we could have said, for example, like this: the first widow Reuben, Levi, Yisachar, and Dan, they're the four of the brothers, four of the ones we know who their respective mothers are, do chalitza, and then the fifth one, God does yibum, and then it could be with the next one also, the same thing. Reuben, Levi, Yisachar, and Dan do chalitza to the next one, and God also does yibum to her. In other words, God, in principle, the fifth, any one of the brothers could do yibum with all five of them. Because really, it could marry all five of them, and it'll turn out. One of them was a definite Yibum, one of them was a proper Yibum, and the other four were just he married, four more women. So why does the Mishnah phrase it the way it does? The answer is, it just means, don't think that it's better if one of them does Yibum for all of them, which then, granted, you have the advantage that then definitely one proper Yibum has definitely been done. Rather, it's better that one of the brothers should do yibum or supposed yibum to each one of the women. In other words, it's better off that Reuben ends up marrying one, and Levi ends up marrying another one, and Yehud and Yisachar another one, etc. Why? Dumum istrami lady day, because then at least you have a chance that each one of them wound up with the one who really is your mama. In other words, yes, you have, if you did it, that one guy marry all of them, then for sure you have one Yibum. But on the other hand, it's at the cost of that then you prevented all the other four from even potentially doing Yibum. Like this, at least you have a chance that...
Yibum,
even if it turns out that it didn't, right.
It's not a waste of the...
No, because, Yibum? Apparently not, because at least we, yes, I mean, we don't have a... Yeah.
They all do Chalitza.
Well, first they do Chalitza, then the Yibum. Next. A braisa goes as follows, and actually, Hagoyes Abach and Tosfos add the words Tana Rabbanan over here. Tana Rabbanan, Mitzasan Achin and Mitzasan She'en Achin. Let's change the case a little bit. Till now, we were talking about that all 10 of these boys are that there are 10 of these boys, and each pair of them are brothers. Again, you had one. No, you can't be Miyab. No, you can't. What? No, we said... Yeah. Right, well, that's what we're saying. You're doing chalitza, and we're not sure whether it was a valid chalitza, and therefore the... Yeah, okay, but the point is, we don't know whether it was a chalitza, we don't know whether it was a yibum, but yeah. Now, so the braisa talks about another possibility. The Mishnah was talking about a case, again, where we had five pairs of boys. Each one of them, you have one member of the pair is for sure the son of this particular mother, and the other one we're not sure. There was a mix-up. Now, how about a case? Miktsasan achin and miktsasan she'en an achin. Suppose that some of them are brothers and some of them are not. Which the Gemara is going to explain in a second. What it means is that some of them are brothers on the father's side and some of them are brothers only on the mother's side. So then, ha'achin choten v'she'en achin miyabmin. So then the brothers do chalitza, and the ones who are not brothers do yibum.
But we don't know who is not brothers.
One second. My call. So let's draw out the scenario as follows. Let's start out that originally Reuven was married to two women, Chana and Rachel. Each of them he had a son from. He had a son Shimon from Chana, he had a son Levi from he had a son Yosef from Rachel. Later on, he divorced Rachel, or he died, doesn't matter. Boaz married Rachel. They had another son, Levi. Boaz also married another woman, and he has a son, Yehuda. Now, in addition, so far you have, what do you have so far? Shimon and Yosef have the same father. Yosef and Levi have the same mother. Now, in addition, then you also have these five. In addition, you also have these five mixed-up boys. You had again. There were five women, and there were five women in the cave over there. Each one had a baby, and we're not sure which one is whose. Now, again, those boys who were not sure who's who got mixed up. The problem is like this. Now, unlike the case in the Mishnah, the problem we have is as follows: when it comes to doing yibum or chalitza. Before we were saying that each one of the brothers potentially can do Yibum because they're brothers from the father's side. They're able to do Yibum. We're just not sure who is who, so therefore you have to have the other four have to do Chalitza to take off the potential Zika. Yeah. Here we have another wrinkle. Yosef, the wrinkle over here is that Yosef is a brother on the mother's side is a brother on the mother's side to one of them, to Levi. So now, Levi is one of the mixed-up ones. Levi is one of the ones who we're not sure if he's Yosef's brother or if he's born from one of the other women. So Yosef can't potentially do Yibum with him. It might turn that out that this is his brother from his mother's side and his wife is an heir to him.
So
So what do we do? If there was his wife an heir to him, his wife is Levi's wife would be also to Yosef. There's no Yibum. So therefore, what we're saying is Achin mina eim chalitzin. So the brothers on the mother's side can only do chalitza. So in this case, Yosef can only do chalitza to all the wives. He cannot do yibum with any one of them because any one of the wives of these five mixed up kids might have been his brother from his mother's side, right? Whereas the ones who are brothers from the father's side are able, so Yehuda, Yisachar, etc., then we follow the same rule as before. Some of them do, each of them does chalitza to the women, and one of them can do yibum with each of the women. So it comes out basically in that case, one of the brothers necessarily is going to have to do yibum or potential yibum with two of the women because we have Yosef out of the picture because in this case, Yosef is out of the picture. He can only do chalitza. Therefore, unlike the case in our Mishnah, it's going to come out that you only have four potential brothers who are able to do yibum, and therefore one of them necessarily has to double dip. Another case, miktsasim koyanim, miktsasim she'enim koyanim. What happens if among these boys, some of them are koyanim and some are not? Now, the problem is that a koyan is not allowed to marry a chalitza. He's not allowed to marry a woman who's had chalitza. So therefore, koyanim chotzin. It's a similar idea. The koyanim can only do chalitza. The koyanim are going to have to do chalitza with each of the women. They can't do yibum with them because it might turn out after she did chalitza with the other one, maybe it was a valid chalitza, and then he's not allowed to marry her. Shein and koyanim miyabim. The ones from the group who are not koyanim are allowed to do yibum. Same idea.
So first the koyanim do chalitza.
Not first the koyanim. The koyanim have to do chalitza with all of them, as well as you have to have similar to the Mishnah that four people do chalitza to each woman.
Right.
And then the fifth one can do yibum with each one of them. But again, in this case, since some of them, namely the Kohenim, are out of the picture, then you're going to have some of them are going to have to double dip as far as yibum.
Which is not a problem.
Right. Because each one comes from a separate bias. Each one comes from a separate household, and that's allowed. We learned a few weeks ago. I mentioned the story from the Yerushalmi about Bar Kappara, who ended up doing Yibum, who had 12 brothers who all, not Bar Kappara, right. the Gemara just says how the Yerushalmi just says that a certain person came to Rebbe, I think it's Rebbe Reuven Margolius, who identifies it as Bar Kappara, that he had 12 brothers who all died, and he ended up doing Yibum with all 12 of them. Yeah. How about another case? Miktsasin Koyanim, Miktsasin Achin Minaim. What if now let's combine both things? Some of these boys are koyanim, and some of them are brothers from the mother's side. So again, you have the same problem. So the koyanim are not going to be able to do yibum because of the problem that she might be a chalutza. The achin minaim are not going to be able to do yibum because it might turn out that the woman I'm marrying really was my brother's wife, my mother's side, and she's an heir to me. Therefore, elu ve'elu chalutzin v'lemi yamin. So therefore, necessarily in that case, everybody has to do chalutza. Nobody's going to be able to do yibum. So all four or five, whatever it is in this case, are going to have to do chalitza with each of the women, and then they can go marry whoever they want from the
nobody
outside world. Yeah, nobody from this group. Tanan Rabbanan, more cases like this, of mix-ups like this. We learn it at Braisa. Yesh chalitza imay misafik. You can have a case where a person winds up doing chalitza with his mother because of a safik, because we're not sure who the mother is, basically. La'choyse misafik. You can have a case where he does chalitza to his sister, misafik, and levita misafik, or to his daughter. Now, if it wasn't a matter of safik, then we know from the beginning of the Masechta. We know from the beginning of the Masechta, for example, that if Reuven's daughter, let's say, is married to Shimon, his brother, and then Reuven dies, and we say, Shimon dies, the one who's married to the daughter. We say Reuven does not do chalitza or yibum because she's his daughter, she's an erva, and therefore there's no zika at all. But here in this case, because of the suffix, it can wind up that you end up having to do chalitza anyway. Ketzen, imoy v'isha acheres. Suppose you have a case where you have his mother and another woman, v'lahen shnei zcharim. Each one has two boys. Each one has two boys. Then, in addition, each one wound up having a baby while they were in hiding. So you have each. So Rachel has two definite children. It doesn't have to be two, actually. Each one had one child. So Rachel had a definite son, Yosef. Chana, rather, had a definite son, Chetz, right? Then Rachel and Chana are both in hiding, and they give birth to babies who are called Shimon and Levi, and we don't know which one is which one's son. Now Yosef goes later on and marries Chana after her husband dies. And vice versa, Chetzron, who was a definite son of Chana, goes and marries Rachel, which he's allowed to. They're not related at all. Then these two boys, Yosef and Chetzron, die without children. So what happens? We have two remaining boys over here, Shimon and Levi. Either one of them, Shimon could be Yosef's son, could be Yosef's brother, or he could be Chetzron's brother. Levi could be Yosef's brother, or he could be Chetzron's brother. Therefore, Zecholit Lashen and Zecholit Lashen. Each one needs to do Chalitza with both of the women, with Rachel and Chana, even though one of them is his mother. So it comes out that each one winds up doing Chalitza with his mother, Misafik. Even though we know for sure that of these women, Rachel and Chana, we know for sure one of them is his mother, but because we don't know whether she's his mother or the other woman is his mother, so he ends up having to do Chalitza to his mother as well as to the other woman. Next.
These children, they had them, non-married, otherwise they're
mamzerim? No, they were married. They were just in hiding. We don't know. The children are not mamzerim. We just don't know who their mother. We don't know who their parents are. We're not sure. Is Shimon the son of Yaakov and Rachel, or is he the son of Reuben and Chana? And similarly, Levi. There's no suffix mamzerim. There's a suffix of their parentage, but it's not a suffix mamzerim. It's not their fault. Forget about not their fault, but nobody did anything wrong over here. Yaakov and Rachel had relations while things were still okay before the war broke out. Similarly, Chana and Reuben, whether they were kosher marriages and everything, they were just there in hiding. The two women gave birth in hiding, and you couldn't tell in the darkness whose baby is whose. Next. Lachosim is suffix case. That, how do you have a case where somebody does chalitza with his sister because of a suffix? Suppose that a man's mother and another woman had two daughters while they were in hiding. Till now we were talking about their sons. Now it comes in a new wrinkle with their daughters. And the respective brothers from the two sides went and married them. Again, so you had, in other words, that you have Rachel and Leah. We don't know which one is which, but you have Reuben and Shimon. Reuben and Shimon, who were born from Avraham and Sarah, and they're not related at all because it's two other women. It's two other women, Rivka and Dinah. So you have Levi in between. Levi is not sure if he's Rachel or Leah, or if he's Rachel or Leah's brother. But Reuben and Shimon know for sure they're not. So Reuben and Shimon respectively go and marry Rachel and Leah. And then Reuben and Shimon die childless. So now Levi is left to do Yibum. Or Chalitza, but again, he doesn't know. Rachel could be a sister, or Leah could be a sister. So obviously he can't do Yibum with either one of them. So he has to do Chalitza with both of them. I skipped a few lines. Brothers who are not from the same mother went and married these women. So the surviving brother, Levi, has to do Chalitza with both of them. Even though, again, one of them we know for sure is a sister, we just don't know which one is which. So it comes out that he ended up doing chalitza with his sister because of a suffix. Now, Rashi says, I don't really like that girsa because in this case we know for sure that one of them is a sister. The expression lachosim is suffix makes it sound like he knows for sure that he's doing chalitza with his sister. He's just doing it because it was suffix. But it's not. He doesn't know which one is his sister. The expression should rather be, Rashi says, nimtza chalitza with suffix achalitza. He's chalitza to a woman who he's not sure if she's his sister. So therefore, Rashi prefers a different explanation based on Tosefta, So what happened over here? Two boys went and married these two girls. What do we have over here? We have Rachel and Leah, are the mixed up ones. Shimon and Levi, who are from the two respective sides and definitely are not brother and are not brothers to Rachel and Leah respectively, go and marry them. Now if they die, then and you have two other boys over here. You have Reuben, who's potentially Rachel's half brother, and Chesron, who's potentially Leah's half brother. So again, each one of them winds up doing chalitza to both women, even though one of them is definitely his sister.
Because he doesn't know which
one. Because he doesn't know which one is his sister and which one's not. So therefore we can call it chalitza achoisei misafik. He's doing chalitza with a woman who is definitely his sister, but it's a safik. He's doing it because of a safik, as opposed to the other explanation that we said before would amount to that he's not even sure that it's more of a safik whether she's his sister, b'chalal.
It's a safik for one, and a certainty for the other one.
Yeah,
but we don't know
basically.
Which one.
Right.
Rashi wants to say
so that's
suffix could mean but for both, but that cannot be.
But a suffix, it has to be that if you're doing it with a woman who's definitely a sister, but he's just doing it because of a suffix because he's not sure which one is which, right? How about Labita is suffix case? How do you have a case where a person does chalitza with his sister, with his daughter because of a suffix? If his wife and another woman had two daughters in hiding, and again two of their brothers come and marry them. Brothers meaning obviously not for they don't have the same parents. And then these brothers die childless, and again they have other brothers who are potentially half brothers of these women. Again, each one has to do chalitza to his potential daughters. So we have over here the cases. You have the two women over here, Sara and Rivka. Shimon and Levi go and marry them respectively because there's no issur in that, even if Sara is definitely Reuben's daughter, then fine. Shimon or Levi, his brothers, are allowed to marry her. It's his niece. You're allowed to marry your niece. Similarly, on the other side, now when Avraham and Yitzchak, for example, die childless, then Kalev is going to have to do chalitza with both of them, even though one of them is even though one or the other of them is his daughter, because again, he doesn't know which one. And again, Rashi has the same issue with it, that you have the same problem. Why is it saying Labrita Misafik rather than Misafik Bita? And therefore, Rashi constructs another scenario where you can have that one of them you know for sure is his daughter, but again, you're doing it mitzad Safik. Tanya, we learned a brisa. Hoyer Rav Meir Omer. Since we're talking about these kinds of odd family situations that you can have, so now Rav Meir is going to bring up another one. Ish v'isha, you can have a case of a man and woman. Pa'amim shemelidin chomesh umes. You can have that they have five different children who belong to five different nations. Not really nations, but like five different groups among the Jewish people. The same husband, the same man, the same woman, but not really tribes. We're going to say what we mean in a second. But there are five different types. People have five different statuses in halacha. Ketzad Yisrael shalokach eved b'shivcha min hashuk. Suppose you have a Yisrael goes and buys a slave and a slave woman from the marketplace. V'lahen shnei bonim. At that point, this couple already has two children. V'nis gayer echad mehen. And of the two children, one of them became a ger. Nimtza echad ger v'echad eved kachavim. This Eved and Shifcha, Joe and Sally, had two children.
Right.
Of these two children, the point is like this. We at this point, the Yisrael has not yet been maspil any of them l'shem Abdus. We learned before in the sugya about Geirus and Abdus that in order to make a person be considered an Eved Knani and have the halachas of an Eved Knani, if it's a man, you have to make him a bris milah. For both men and women, you have to do them tevila, not l'shem Geirus, but rather l'shem Abdus. You do it for the sake of that they should be considered an Eved. And then they become chayiv in the mitzvahs of Avadim. In this case, this Jew bought this couple, Joe and Sally, and was not matzah when l'shem habdus yet. So they're still considered full-fledged goyim. And their child is also a goy. But now one of these children went and was misgayer, and became a ger. So far you have nimtza echad ger ve'echad eved kochavim. So far then Joe and Sally have two children. One is a ger, and one is still considered a goy. Next, Bilam L'shem Avdus. Suppose that now you go and are matbil the parents, Joe and Sally, as avadim. So now they gain a new status. They're not goyim anymore. Now they're avadim knanim. V'nizkikul zelazeh, and then they have relations. And they have a child. Harekan ger v'ovik kuchavim ve'evet. So now they have a child who's a ger, the one who was already toivel, the one who's a goy who was never toivel at all, and the one who was born after they became avadim, who now is considered an evet knanim. Because you go according to the mother. The child of a shichur knani is an evet knani. Next, shichur to shichur val avet. What happens now? The Jewish master frees the slave woman. The Joe is still an evet, but Sally now is a shichur mishuchleres, which means that she becomes a Jew. Uval avet, and then Joe has relations with her, which is also at that point, and the Gemara is going to say in a second. So now the child is born. This fourth child who's born from this same set of parents is a mamzer, because as the Gemara is going to point out in a minute, we learned before, again in that sugya in the Mem, we had a whole machlokes whether if a goy or an eved has relations with a Jewish woman, is the child considered a mamzer or is he considered kosher? Our braisa goes according to the opinion that he's a mamzer. So far you have four kinds.
Even though the end of the Gemara then, we said that
the halacha is that he's kosher, but we're talking in the Braisa here, yeah.
Who was the opinion that he's a mamzer?
So we had different opinions over there. We had a number of different amiroyim and tenoyim on both sides of the issue. But here we're talking about mayor. Hoyer mayor, I mean. And finally, shichur shneim v'siyam zelazeh. What happens now? You finally went and were meshachur Joe as well, and then married them back off to each other. Now they're both considered Jews, so now they get remarried. And they have a child. So now their fifth son is Yisrael. So there you go. The same couple has children now. Each of their children has a completely different status in halacha. One's a goy. One's a goy. One's an eved. One's a ger. One's a goy. One's an eved. One's a mamzer, and one is a born Yisrael. The question is, my kamash malan. Okay, it's a very cute scenario. But what's the chiddush? What is the braisa coming to tell us? The answer is, he's coming to tell us the chiddush is about the fourth one. That oyvid kachavim be'eved abal bas yisrael avlad mamzer. That he holds that indeed, if an eved has relations with a bas yisrael, like in this case where Sally is already a meshuchreres and Joe is still an eved, the chiddush is that the child is a mamzer. Which again, that's not the halacha, and we had different opinions before that said avlad kosher. So according to halacha, you couldn't have that. According to halacha, according to the final halacha, the maximum different scenarios you could have is four of them. But according to Reb Meir, you have all five.
What
that was the chiddush
in this as compared to the previous?
Reb Meir is just clarifying that that's his shitta. Turn it up on him, then we learn in a braisa, a similar odd scenario. Yesh moicheres aviv lahagbis imei ksubasa. You can have a case where a person sells his father in order for his mother to be able to collect her ksuba. Ketzad? That's the question. Yisrael lokach eved v'shivcha min ashuk. So Yisrael buys an eved and a shivcha, Joe and Sally again, v'lahem ben, and they have a son, Tom, let's call him, v'shichras ha-shivcha, v'nasa. Then the Yisrael frees the shivcha, which now she becomes the Yisraelis, and the Yisrael, unlike in the previous case where she stays married to Joe, here the Yisrael marries her, which he's allowed to. She's a shivcha m'shukharis, he's allowed to marry her. He marries her, but Amad because of Kol Machas of Livna, and he goes and writes out all of his and writes a document giving his whole inheritance to her son, to this Tom, who is still and now Tom is a guy. He was born when his parents were still goyim. He was born when his parents were still goyim because he was born before the Yisrael ever bought them. So he's a guy. But now he owns all of the Yisrael's property, including, therefore, he doesn't own the Shivcha, obviously, because she's a Shivcha Meshacharis. But he owns Joe now. He owns his own father, because his own father is an Eved Kanani. Nimtazem, so now what happens? His mother, the former Sally, the Shivcha Meshacharis, he took Suba from the Yisrael. Nimtazem, so it comes out that Tom is going to be able to sell Joe in order to collect the money to pay off his mother, Sally's Suba. Now, one thing is, actually, the truth is that, Mepharshim should point out, doesn't actually mean, we learned before in the sugya about Avadim and Daf Mem Zayin, that actually a goy does not have the ability to own an Eved Knani, to actually own his guf. All he can own is his work, the ability to have him work for him. So So that's what we mean over here. In other words, in this scenario over here, Tom, the son, he can't sell Joe in the sense that now Joe belongs to somebody else, but he's a person, but he can sell Joe's malacha. He can sell his father's malacha, but now his father is obligated to work on behalf of somebody else to raise the money to pay off the ksuba. Again, the question is, I come Ashmalan, so what's the chiddush? What's the chiddush in this? Again, it's a very odd scenario, but what's the chiddush in it, la'alacha? The answer is kuler Rameir. This half of the Braisa is also according to Rameir. This is a continuation of the previous Braisa. The whole thing Rameir is saying it. And the chiddush is the avda mitaltali. The chiddush is two things. First of all, that an eved according to the mayor is considered mitaltalim. There's a machlokas in various places. In many places in halacha, in many places in halacha, avadim actually are considered like karka. Since the pasuk says about avadim knanim, the snachalta moisim levnechem, that you bequeath them to your sons that they should inherit as a yerusha. So we learn that in many ways avadim are considered like lamb. For example, the same way as if you have a taina against somebody else on a matter of land, you can't make them swear and base in for it. The same way if you have a taina on an eved, you can't. A number of dinim like that that depend on that equation of avodim to land. You can't use land for pidyon aben. Similarly, you can't give an eved to the kohen to pay for pidyon aben, etc. Yeah. However, in this case, according to the mayor, an eved is considered like metalphalim, number one, and number two, that he holds a metalphalim ishtabdi l'ksuba. What? Metalphalim is movable property. And number two, umetalphalim ishtabdi l'ksuba. Number two, that according to Reb Meir, even metalphalim are meshuba, they're under lien to the ksuba. Normally, throughout Shas, we usually tend to assume that only landed property, only real estate, is under shibud to the ksuba. Because that's the only thing that the wife can be sure of is still going to be existent. Metalkalin may not exist anymore at the time when it comes to collecting ksuba. So usually you assume that they're not under lien to the ksuba. Reb Meir holds that not. Reb Meir holds that metalkalin are as well. Later on, by the way, in the times of the Gaonim, they did make a takana that in general that metalkalin are also under lien for all kinds of debts, not just for ksuba, but for all kinds of debts, because there came a point when many Jews didn't own land anymore, and therefore they had to rely on something else. But actually, in a ksuba, in a standard ksuba, actually, the chassan writes over there that I'm being meshabed not only my landed property, but also everything I own. I feel like glimmer dal kaso, even the shirt off my back is all meshuba to this ksuba.
Yeah,
to the mayor or masayim or whatever it is. So that would be the chiddush. This that we're saying that Tom is able to sell Joe's malacha. If we said that avodim are not under shibur to the ksuba, you couldn't do that. You'd have to use Kauka, or the widow, Sally, is not going to be able to have anything to collect from if there isn't anything else. Kauka is land. V'boisema, or another... The Takana about being able to collect from the Taltalim in general was made by the early Goenim. V'boisema, or another possibility, Hakamash Malon, Abdurkim Kauka Dami. Or the other way you could look at it is that the Braisa is telling us that on the contrary, Avadim are considered like land. Land is definitely under lien to it, so everybody agrees to that. So good, then. Avadim are also. Continuing on this topic of mixed-up children, as the Mishnah says, Ha'isha shenis'ara v'lada b'vlad kalosa. Suppose you have a woman who her child was mixed up with the child of her daughter-in-law. So again, she and her daughter-in-law were in hiding together. They both had babies. You're not sure which one is which. Higdilu atarubis, both children grow up, both these boys grow up, Vanasu Nashim Umesu, they marry and then later on they die. What?
It's transgression.
Yeah. So now the problem is like this. The problem is you have Levi and Yitzchak in this case both died, but you're not sure which one is the brother of who. Which one is the daughter of the older woman, versus which one is the son of the daughter-in-law? So therefore, bnei akala chotzin v'lei miyabnin. So the other children of the daughter-in-law, the other children of the daughter-in-law are going to have to do chalitza. They cannot do yibum. Because with each one of these men's wives,
you're not sure whether she's your brother's wife and you can do yibum, or she's your father's brother's wife, and in that case she's also to you as an erva.
On the other hand, the children of the older woman, so the brothers-in-law of the Kala, are allowed to do either Yibum or Chalitza. Shesafik, Eshesachav, Eshes Benachav, because in their case, the Safik is it my brother's wife and then she's Mutter as Yibum, or, no, for the children of the older generation, the ones who are the same generation as the daughter-in-law. So for them, the wives of these two men, either one of these men is their brother, and in that case they can do yibum with his wife, or the eshes ben achiv, or the wife of your brother's son, which fine, that's also allowed. Your brother's son's wife is not an eva. So therefore, either way, they're allowed to do chalitza or yibum. Mesu Aksherim, continues the Mishnah, what happens if the Ksherim, meaning the ones who we know for sure are the respective children of the respective marriages, so if they die, now why we call them Ksherim, the Gemara is going to talk about them, and what does that imply? The other ones are possible, the other ones are not possible, they're not Mamzerim or anything. Ksherim means the good ones, the ones who we know for sure who they are. So then we have the opposite problem. Again, we have the problem, we don't know with each of these two mixed up children, which one is their brother versus which one is the brother versus which one is the nephew. So hatarubis levnei askena chotzen v'le miyabmin. So that both of the mixed up children have to do chalitza with the children of the older woman, of the grandmother. They can't do yibum. Same problem. Because you have the same problem. They might be each one of them might be his brother's wife, and that would be fine. Or it might be his brother's father's wife. It might be his father's brother's wife, which is also. But the tarubas, as far as the children of the daughter-in-law, one can do chalitza, one can do yibum. Because again, however you look at it, either you did chalitza with the right one, with your sister-in-law. And then the other one is not your sister-in-law, Bechalal, and she's allowed to marry whoever she wants. Or the other way around, or you did chalitza, and now she can marry whoever she wants. So however, you've covered all your bases like that. Another din. Kehenes shenis arev vlodeb vlod shechav. So what if you have a kehenes, the wife of a kohen, who her son was mixed up with the son of her shivcha? So again, she and her shivcha were together in a hiding place. They both had children. You don't know now which one is which one is a kohen, which one is an eved.
I think it's your daughter-in-law.
A shivcha is a maid servant. Harelo oichlam b'truma. So these people are allowed to eat truma because a kohen is allowed to eat truma and the slave of a kohen is allowed to eat truma.
Right.
It comes out, in other words, when they grow up, these two boys, one of them is a kohen, one of them is a slave. We don't know which one is which, but either way, a slave of a kohen is also able to eat truma. They get one share in the granary. When they go to collect truma, they get one share. The Gemara will talk about that. The Ein and Matam and Lameisim, neither one of them is allowed to become Tomei by dead bodies, because either one might be a Kohen. The Ein and Noisim Noshim, Ben Kredis, Ben Tzulos. However, neither of them is going to be allowed to marry a wife, whether a kosher woman or whether a possible woman, like a Shivcha. They can't marry, for example, a Gioris, because they might be a Kohen. On the other hand, they can't marry a shivcha because a Yisrael in general is not allowed to marry a shivcha. A kohen certainly isn't. Higdilu atarubis v'shichru zeseh. What happens now? They grow up and they flee each other. So each one of them gives a. Well, we'll get to the end of the Mishnah, and then I guess we'll continue. So when they grow up and they free each other, so each one of them gives the other one a get shichru, just to be on the safe side, in case you were the eved, now you're free, so you're able to get married. Then both of them have to so each one of them gives a get shichru. If I'm the master and you're the slave, then here. And if not, then the get shichru I gave you is meaningless, and vice versa. But then, Noisim Noshim is the corner. So then they both have to marry women who are suitable for Kohenim. That neither of them can marry a Giyotis, because again, each one might be a Kohen, but they can both marry a Yisraelis, because there's no problem. A freed slave is allowed to marry a Yisraelis. The Ein Matam and Lameisim, even at that point, they're considered the children. Maybe, I don't know, I guess. The Ein Matam and Lameisim, they can't become Tomei Mes, again, because each one might be a Kohen. The Imnitmu Ein Tzaiskin Aboyin, but if they do become Tomei Mes, they don't get Malkus, because we don't know for sure that they're a Kohen. Ve'en an ochlin v'truma. At that point, though, neither of them can eat truma, because before we said when one of them is the master and one of them is the slave, then you're allowed to eat truma. Now that one of them, one or the other of them, is going to be a freed slave, he's a zohi, he can't eat truma. So therefore, neither of them can eat truma at that point. V'im ochlu enin mesham and keren v'chaymesh. However, if they do eat truma, they don't have to pay back, by mistake, they don't have to pay the koyin, the value of the truma plus a fifth, as they would if it was a zohi who ate truma, because they can say to the koyin, you want me to pay, bring proof that I'm not a koyin. You don't know, nobody knows. Tosfos points out they will actually have to set aside the value of the truma because there's a different matter. There's a matter of paying back the koyin, but there's also a matter of kapara, of getting forgiveness from the Eibishter for eating this truma. So you do have to set that aside, and it's considered to have the status of truma, and you can sell it to the koyin and then get the money for it. You don't have to give it to him. The Ein and Chok and Alagor, and they do not collect truma in the granary because one or the other of them is not a koyin. When they themselves take truma from their produce, they can sell it. They don't have to give it to the koyin, because again, each one of them can say, you want me to give it to you, bring proof that I'm not a koyin. And they can keep the money. The Einan Chok in Bekodsh HaMikdash, they do not divide in the Kodshim of the Beis HaMikdash. The Einan Noisimam Kodshim, you don't give them Kodshim. So Rashi has two explanations of these last two things. One is it means that the din is, now the din is like this. Usually when a person brings a korban, it's brought by the mishmar, it's brought by the group of koyanim who are on duty in the Beis HaMikdash that week. The din is, though, that suppose you have a koyan from mishmar number one. He comes one day to Yerushalayim in the middle while mishmar number 16 is on duty, and he has a korban to bring. The din is, even though it's not his mishmar's week, he's allowed to bring his own korban. We learn that from a pasuk. In this case, Rashi says, we don't force each of them to give them to the members of that week's mishmar. Now, they themselves can't bring the korban, obviously, because they themselves might not be a kohen. But the choices are, either Rashi says they have the current mishmar bring the korban, and then the members of that mishmar have to give them the skin of the korban as if they were kohenim. Or number two, you don't eat the skin, you use it for leather. Number two, they can make a shliach. They can appoint any shliach they want to bring their korban. Or number three, they can wait until the mishmar that they want to bring the korban comes up. They don't have to do it that particular week. So that would be according to that, that would be the meaning of the Ein and Chok and B'Kodesh HaMikdash, that they don't get to divide their portions of the Karbanis, but you don't give them Kodshim, but you also don't take them away from them. That's Rashi's first explanation. Rashi's second explanation is that we mean that you don't give them a Bechor, for example. A Bechor is supposed to be given to a Kohen. You don't give it to them because they may not be a Kohen. But if they have a Bechor of their own, you don't take it away from them, because again, they might be a Kohen. Upturim min azroyam min al-chayayim min akeva. Both of these people are potter from having to give the zroyam, l'chayayim, and keva, the portions of an animal that's shechted that have to be given to a Kohen. They don't have to, because again, who says they're not Kohenim? If they themselves own a bechor, then you can't force them to give it to the koyanim, but they themselves can't eat it themselves because they might be zorim. What they do is they have to wait till the animal develops a mum. The yehroya should go pasture ad shiyistoyv till it develops a mum, and then they'll be able to eat it. The noisnel of chumrus koyanim and chumrus yisraelim. We give these people the chumrus of koyanim and the chumrus of yisraelim, which we'll learn in the Gemara what that means. And we'll continue with the Gemara tomorrow.
Once one of them
freed the other, then they can both get married. Till now they couldn't, because the people that a koyanim is allowed to marry are completely different than the people that an eved is allowed to marry. Once they free each other, at least they're both allowed to marry Yisraelim or Levim or even a bas koyan. Yeah.
And their descendants
would be self a koyanim, I guess. I don't know.
Who didn't marry there?